Get up now, get up now, get up out of bed. Wash your face, brush your teeth, comb your sleepy head. Here's your clothes and your shoes, hear the words I said. Get up now, get up and make your bed. Are you hot, are you cold, are you wearing that? Where's your books and your lunch and your homework at? Grab your coat and your gloves and your scarf and hat. Don't forget, you gotta feed the cat. Eat your breakfast, the experts tell us it's the most important meal of all. Take your vitamins so you will grow up one day to be big and tough. Just remember the orthodontist will be seeing you at 3-2. Don't forget your piano lesson is this afternoon, so you must play, don't shovel. Choose lovely, but hurry, the bus is here. Be careful, come back here. Did you wash behind your ears? Play outside, don't play rough. Would you just play fair? Be polite, make a friend, don't forget to share. Work it out, wait your turn, never take a dare. Get along, don't make me come down there. Clean your room, fold your clothes, put your stuff away. Make a bed, do it now. Do we have all day? Were you born in a barn? Would you like some hay? Can you even hear a word I say? Answer the phone, get off the phone. Don't sit so close, turn it down. No texting at the table. No more computer time tonight. Your iPod's my iPod if you don't listen up. Where are you going and with whom and what time do you think you're coming home? Saying thank you, please excuse me makes you welcome everywhere you roam. You'll appreciate my wisdom someday when you're older and you're grown. Can't wait till you have a couple little children of your own. You'll thank me for the counsel I gave you so willingly, but right now I'd thank you not to roll your eyes at me. Close your mouth when you chew, we'd appreciate. Take a bite, maybe two, of the stuff you hate. Use your fork, do not burp, or I'll set you straight. Eat the food I put up on your plate. Get an A, get the door, don't get smart with me. Get a grip, get in here, I'll count 2, 3. Get a job, get a life, get a PhD, get a dose of your story straight and tell the truth for once, for heaven's sake. And if all your friends jumped off a cliff, would you jump too? If I've said it once, I've said at least 1,000 times before that you're too old to act this way. It must be your father's DNA. Look at me when I am talking, stand up straighter when you walk a place. For everything and everything must be in place. Stop crying or I'll give you something real to cry about. Oh! Brush your teeth, brush your face, get your PJs on. Get in bed, get a hug, say a prayer with Mom. Don't forget, I love you. And tomorrow we will do this all again. Because our moms are clever and you don't need the reason why. Because I said so, I said so, I said so, I said so. I'm the mom, the mom, the mom, the mom, the mom. Ta-da!
Nothing for you.
If you had your way, and all your forget that any of them are calculated marketing teases, and your dreams, which are genuine, came true, having to do with immigration, having to do with women's, with abortion. I mean, what would this country look like?
It would look like New York City during the Republican National Convention. In fact, that's what I think heaven's going to look like.
And what did that look like?
Happy, joyful Republicans in the greatest city in the world.
No. But I'm talking with this country. You don't want to make this country. It's not about Republicans. I'm saying, what would the fabric of this country look like? Forget that the Republicans would.
Well, everyone would root for America. The Democratic Party would look like Joe Lieberman. The Republican Party would look like Duncan Hunter.
No. I don't want to. I'm not talking about politically the landscape. Would we be safer? Would people be happier?
We'd be a lot safer.
Would there be more tolerance? Would there be, would women be happier? Would the races get along better? The Ann Coulter prescription. Tell me what would be different in our fabric of country?
Well, all of those things.
I could give an argument that there would be more divisiveness, that there would be more hate. There'd be a bigger difference between the rich and the poor, a lot of other. Tell me why would this be a better world? I'm going to give you, this is your show.
Okay, take the Republican National Convention. And people were happy, they're Christian, they're tolerant. They defend America.
We should be Christian. It would be better if we were all Christian.
Yes.
We should be Christian.
Yes. Would you like to come to church with me, Donnie?
So I should not be a Jew. I should be a Christian, and this would be a better
place. You could be a practicing Jew, but you're not.
Okay, I actually am. That's not true. I really am. But so we would be better if people were no Jews.
Well,
no Buddhists,
whenever I'm harangued by
you can't believe that.
You know, liberals on diversity. No, it's true. I give all these speeches at mega churches across America, and the one thing that's really striking about it is how utterly, completely diverse they are and completely unselfconsciously. I mean, you walk past a mixed race couple in New York, and it's like they have a chip on their shoulder, just waiting for somebody to say something as if anybody would.
I don't agree with that. Really.
And
maybe you have the chip looking at them. I don't. I see a lot of interracial couples, and I don't see any more or less chips there either way.
No, in fact, there was an entire Seinfeld episode about Elaine and her boyfriend dating because they wanted to be a mixed race couple. So you're lying.
Seinfeld episode. Okay.
Nothing for you.
When you say it's been given. The president says he wants diplomacy to work to convince the Iranian government to stop enriching uranium, to not go forward. I would tell the Iranian people that we have no desire for conflict, he told David Ignatius of the Washington Post the other day. So what does that mean? The order has been given.
We are conducting military operations inside Iran right now. The evidence is overwhelming from both the Iranians, Americans, and from congressional sources.
What is military operation? Sure. Define that.
Sure. They probably have had two objectives going back 18 months. The first was to gather intelligence. Where is the Iranian nuclear program? The second has been to prepare dissident groups for phase two, which will be the strike, which will come as the next phase, I think.
Preparing intelligence, that's understandable, using all sorts of means. They want to know what the Iranians are up to in terms of their nuclear program. But are you suggesting that U.S. military forces, special operations forces, or others are on the ground right now in Iran?
Yes, sir. Certainly. Absolutely clear. The evidence is overwhelming from lots of sources. And again, most of them you can read in the public. You know, Seymour Hersh has done good work on it, and there are lots of other people who have done that. I've talked to Iranians. I asked an Iranian ambassador to the IAEA, what's this I hear about Americans being there? He said to me, well, we've captured some people who work with them. We've confirmed that they're there.
Yeah, but you know, these guys, the Iranians, you can't necessarily believe what they're saying. They could arrest some dissidents in Iran and say these are American spies. They do that all the time.
Sure. The House Committee on Emerging Threats tried to have a hearing some weeks ago in which they asked the Department of State and Defense to come and answer this question because it's serious enough to be answered without congressional approval, and they didn't come to the hearing. There are sources that I talked to on the Hill who believe that's true, and it's being done without congressional oversight.
Look, I was once a Pentagon correspondent many years ago, and in those days and in these days, and as Jamie McIntyre just reported, and as you well know from your time of active duty at the Pentagon in the U.S. military, these guys are planning contingency operations for almost everything. If Canada goes to war against the United States, they've got a contingency plan.
Okay, different now. Two differences. Number one, we've learned from Time magazine today that some U.S. naval forces have been alerted for deployment. That is a major step. That's first. The second thing is the sources suggest the plan is not in the Pentagon. The plan has gone to the White House. That's not normal planning. When the plan goes to the White House, that means we've gone to a different
stage. You think it's possible there's a little psychological warfare being played on Ahmadinejad right now to rattle him, to spread the word, to put out this kind of information, to get him nervous, perhaps a little bit more agreeable to the diplomatic option?
It's possible. It's also possible that this path was selected a long time ago. You recall that even before Gulf II, that at a time when the president said, we have no plan, I have no plan on my desk, in the summer of 2002, we began bombing Iraq, Operation Southern Focus, without congressional approval, without the UN sanctions, we went ahead and began bombing.
Well, the argument at that time was if there were violations of the no-fly zone, U.S. warplanes were flying in the north and the south, and there were rockets or anti-aircraft fire going up, they could take those out.
Yes, but it was a campaign to begin the war before the war began. And, you know, I'd suggest the evidence is there.
So you see a similar pattern right now.
Exactly.
We're going to follow this closely. Colonel Sam Gardner, thanks very much.
That old Beach Boys song, Bomberan. Bomb, bomb, bomb. Anyway,
for you.
If you've not been to mainmediaresources.com, and that's Maine with an E, M-A-I-N-E, as in the state, listen to this. In 1871, Congress passed a law which abolished the charters of the cities of Washington and Georgetown, the seat of our nation's capital. They also reestablished a new corporation to replace those entities that had all of their property, tax receipts, transferred to it. Mm-hmm. That new corporation was called the District of Columbia. The law that did this can be found in the 41st Congress, are you ready for this, listeners, ready to copy, 41st Congress, Session 3, Chapter 62, 1871, which states in part, the law that did this can be found, oh, wait a minute, it says Section 40, and be it further enacted, that the charters of the cities of Washington and Georgetown shall be repealed on and after the first day of June, A.D. 1871, and all offices of said corporations abolished at that date. Section 41 states, and upon the repeal of the charters of the cities of Washington and Georgetown, the District of Columbia be, and is hereby declared to be the successor of said corporations, and all the property of said corporations and of the County of Washington shall become vested in the said District of Columbia. In other words, our nation's capital is not Washington, D.C., as we have been taught to believe. Washington's charter was repealed and abolished in 1871. The only entity referred to thereafter was the District of Columbia.
Election time is coming. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday. If I was president, if I was president, a old man told me, instead of spending billions on the war, we can use some of that money in the ghetto. I know some so poor, when it rains, that's when they shower, screaming, fight the power. That's when the vulture devoured. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, if I was president.
Should state and local, and in some cases, by proxy anyway, federal governments, subsidize private businesses like sports teams by building them stadiums when perhaps that choice is being made at the expense of infrastructure and bridges?
I've actually been involved in that argument for many years, and I think that, here's what I said in Cleveland. Instead of spending $400 billion or more for a stadium, why don't we just buy the team? I mean, really, you know, that's where the money is. So I think that we ought to be talking about an approach that gives people a return for their investment. Now, with respect to infrastructure, for the third time, I've introduced a bill. This time it's H.R. 3400. It's a bipartisan bill. Congressman LaTourette of Ohio is with me on it. Here's what it'll do. It'll create millions of new jobs rebuilding America's infrastructure, rebuilding roads, water systems, sewer systems, bridges. I've been on this for many years. It will create jobs for laborers, for iron workers, for carpenters, for people who are involved in infrastructure. Millions of new jobs and create a Federal Bank of Infrastructure Modernization. Now, the time to talk about infrastructure is a little bit late after Katrina. It's a little bit late after the bridges fall in Minneapolis. But I've been there, and I understand the implication. Why do you need an infrastructure? You need an infrastructure so you can create a basis for jobs. I want a new American manufacturing policy where the maintenance of steel, automotive, aerospace, and shipping is seen as vital to our national security. And I want to see America take a new direction in trade as part of this, and that means it's time to get out of NAFTA and the WTO and go and have trade and have trade and have trade that's based on workers' rights, the right to organize, the right to collective bargaining, the right to strike, the right to decent wages and benefits, and on and on. I'm here as the workers' candidate.
Thank you, Congressman. Congressman Kucinich, scrap NAFTA or fix it?
You asked a direct question. I think it deserves a direct answer. In my first week in office, I will notify Mexico and Canada that the United States is withdrawing from NAFTA. I will notify the WTO we're withdrawing from the WTO. We need a president who knows what the right thing is to do the first time, not in retrospect. And I think that we need to go back to trade. Excuse me, we need to go forward to trade. That's based on workers' rights, human rights, and environmental quality principles. No one else on this stage could give a direct answer because they don't intend to scrap NAFTA. We're going to be stuck with it, and I'm your candidate. If you want to get out of NAFTA, let's hear it. Do you want out of NAFTA? Do you want out of the WTO? Tell these candidates. Listen to the workers. Listen to the voices of the workers of America.
Nothing for you.
I don't know why we're dancing around. The Congress is not getting us out of Iraq. And their whole
okay, let's not dance around, Senator. Let's not dance around. Why do people like Hillary Clinton, why do Hillary Clinton and the other candidates at the top, with the exception perhaps of a few of them, why are they so careful not to challenge this president's central foreign policy of war in Iraq and potential war in other countries? Why don't they challenge it?
Because they are running for office, and it's business as usual. It's politics as usual. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to rock the boat. And so they just dance around the issues, and they'll keep on doing as long as you and the media keep building them up. Does that answer your question, Chris?
No, I think it's a strong counterpunch to me, Senator. Where have you been since 1972?
You deserve it. You deserve it. I started developing this concept that Americans are the ones that should come in as lawmakers. Not me, Americans. And so when I filed for office, it was to bring attention to the National Initiative, which is a federal ballot initiative to empower you, Chris Matthews, to be able to make laws. You're just as qualified as anybody in the Congress. Stop and think. What we've got to do is we've got to have a law, not a resolution. We've got to have a law that says if you don't get out of Iraq, what you've got to do is prosecute the president criminally for disobeying the law. Now, if you don't set that confrontation
up... But you're trying to criminalize the law by saying it's a felony. I heard you say that. I couldn't believe it. How can you pass a law if this president won't sign it? You know the Constitution. How can you make it felonious to have Bush's foreign policy if he doesn't sign the bill making himself a felon? It makes no sense what you're saying.
Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense, Chris, if you knew something about the tactics of the Senate. How the hell do you think I was able to stop the draft with a five-month filibuster? I'm a good tactician. Let me tell you how you do it, Chris. Real simple. What you do is you know that he's going to veto it, and so that means you need two-thirds vote to override his veto. What you do in the Senate, what you do in the House...
Where do you get 16 Republicans to declare President Bush a felon?
Give me a break. They will. Trust me. They will. You know how you do it? Every single day, the Speaker brings up this legislation, and you have a vote on overriding the veto. And you do the same thing at noon in the Senate. And then the American people can clearly see who is for the continued killing. Of course, we'll have failures. Forget the generals that are there. And then the people will be able to identify, here's the president, he won't do anything. Here's the Congress. They don't have the guts to really face up to the problem, but you do it every day. Then Americans will get to see this. They'll be able to see black and white. Right now, what's happened is with the diddling around this happening, the Democrats have given shelter to the Republicans with the constitutional argument that they're using, which is accurate. It's accurate, Chris.
What's your next step, Senator? What are you going to do next? What are you going to do next in this campaign to keep your excitement about your idea to declare the foreign policy of this administration to be a felony? What's your next step?
Next step is what? Just go to the next debate, Chris, and maybe I'll get the same amount of time as the others.
Nothing for you.
It's mercantilistic. It's neocolonialism that you have to maintain your supply routes and your natural resources. But I think there's still a lot of those kind of people around, and they believe, you know, we were told it was about oil and jobs when it first started in 1990, and this is just a continuation of that war. Indeed, this war is a mistake, was a mistake to go in. It's very costly, and it has a lot of economic ramifications. We're going broke. We have this huge deficit. We're spending nearly $1 trillion with maintaining our empire overseas, and that's a cost. Right now, we own foreigners $2.7 trillion. No wonder they have money to come back in here and buy stuff up, and then we object. But that has to do with our monetary system as well as our foreign policy. So if we want prosperity, we have to change our foreign policy. We have to live within our means, but we can't maintain a reserve currency where all our greatest export today are paper dollars. We create money out of thin air, and they still accept it as if it was backed by gold. And that is the reason all this money goes overseas, and at the same time, we finance all this military activity overseas. It's bankrupting this country. And not only that, it's a threat to our personal liberties here, and it's going to be a threat to our economy because we are beginning to live beneath our means. And that is a natural consequence of what happens when you live beyond your means. So we must change our policy both overseas and domestically. Absolutely. This idea of going and talking to attorneys totally baffles me. Why don't we just open up the Constitution and read it? You're not allowed to go to war without a declaration of war. Now, as far as fleeing enemies go, yes, if there's an imminent attack on us, we've never had that happen in 220 years. The thought that the Iranians could pose an imminent attack on the United States is preposterous. There's no way. This is just war propaganda. Continued war propaganda, preparing this nation to go to war and spread this war not only in Iraq but into Iran unconstitutionally. It is a road to disaster for us as a nation. It's a road to our financial disaster if we don't read the Constitution.
Well, first we have to have a sound economy, and we don't. We're overtaxed. We're overregulated. We work with a currency that is non-functional, and our prosperity is slipping, and we are overextended overseas. You can't have a prosperous economy at home when you're spending all the money overseas. You can't even have a strong national defense if you're spending all this money overseas in wars that we're not winning. So if we want a prosperous economy here, we have to change these policies, and we can't be bailing out farmers and subsidizing ethanol. This is just the wrong way to go. The taxpayers pay for the subsidies, and then they pay for higher prices when they buy the gasoline or buy the food. It never works. The right to unionize should be a basic right of any group. You should be able to organize. You should have no privileges, no special benefits legislated to benefit the unions. But you should never deny any working group to organize and negotiate for the best set of standards of working conditions. No, I'm not going to support them if they continue down the path which has taken our party down the tubes. I mean, we've lost credibility because of all our spending, because we have violated the civil liberties of all the American people, and we have adopted the Democrats' foreign policy. Why don't we run on George Bush's foreign policy of a humble foreign policy and no nation building, okay, and don't police the world? Then I'll support.
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Uh-huh.
Republican candidate Ron Paul is causing quite a stir in the 2008 presidential race. You see, while he's polling way behind the leading contenders, his fundraising is going extremely well, and his campaign is gaining major traction on the internet. Here's CNN's Jim Acosta.
Nobody is more surprised by the success of Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul than Ron Paul.
Have you come to grips with what's happening with your campaign?
Probably not completely, because it's still pretty shocking to me.
That is so nice.
Shocking because this little-known congressman from Texas has crashed the party in the race for the GOP nomination. His anti-war, anti-big government views aimed at younger voters appear to be catching fire at a critical time.
Like Howard Dean before him, Congressman Ron Paul is the internet phenomenon of this presidential campaign. The lion's share of his donations come from online supporters, and one of the signs you'll often see among his crowds is Google Ron Paul.
Drawing millions over the net in the last fundraising quarter, Paul has more money on hand than John McCain. And he's estimated to be the most watched presidential candidate on YouTube. There are songs about Ron Paul.
Congressman Ron Paul, thank you so much for joining me.
He even agreed to an interview with a college student in his dorm room.
Ron Paul really is one of the surprises of the 2008 campaign. I think in the beginning, most people thought that he would be a very minor candidate and really wouldn't be much heard from.
Paul changed that with his chief issue, Iraq. A war, he says, was sold to the American people with false information.
Do you mean that the president and the vice president essentially misled the country?
Well, we were misled. What we can't read is into their minds and their motivation.
While Paul supporters like his views on the war,
he wants to get us out of Iraq. He's not giving a timeline.
His liberal followers may not realize Paul, also an OBGYN doctor, is a vocal abortion opponent.
You take the pro-life issue, you know, not sending kids off to war and not having a draft is very pro-life.
A one-time libertarian candidate for president, Paul opposes most military spending overseas, the war on drugs, and national health care. He earned the name Dr. No on Capitol Hill for voting against bills he thought were not expressly authorized in the Constitution.
Do you really think it's possible that you could win the Republican nomination?
Of course, it's possible. It's difficult.
Is it likely, though?
It's hard to say. I think it's a lot more likely today than it was 6 months ago.
With the first primaries just months away, the next trick for this so-called Dr. No is getting more voters to say yes.
Thank you.
Jim Acosta, CNN, New York.
Nothing for you.
Being fruitful and multiplying is about more than a woman's ability to obtain, hold down, and sustain life. This is about her generously planting seeds in minds, incubating them for 3 minutes of your time and letting the mic go. Knowing God will help them grow, and every time you speak his truth, you will become fruitful. Multiplying his word, amplifying what's read, walking in what you heard, all the while planting seeds along the way. You see, anybody can make a baby these days, but can you evoke a thought in your listeners that will have them leaning sideways because they want to become your fertile ground? They want to catch your every verb and noun and use your flow to cause each seed to grow, making the manure that is pumped inside your mind by the media useful. Can you stand in front of children and speak in a level underneath speech because they respond to other stimuli, like if your words and your heart meet and reflect what the other has projected? We need to make sure the minds and hearts of our children are protected, nurturing more than just the wombs of newborns who are expected, making the spoken word tradition once again respected because God gave it to us and its power He perfected. In Genesis 1:28, when he told Adam to be fruitful and multiply, his words weren't rejected. He spoke to nothing and the world was erected. If you speak of nothing, then the world is neglected, infected with brainwashed dummies, well-preserved mentally dead mummies who are so wrapped up in themselves, they're okay with never being able to speak words that produce life, who are all right with never having to think twice because once was hard enough. About our children who are growing up claiming to be tough, speaking violence into existence and having their own words called their bluff, not realizing they just committed verbal suicide. We need to be fruitful and multiply in Baltimore City because the powers that be are unleashing an educational genocide, causing our young people to become dead children walking. This is what we need to do. We need to stand up, actively listen, and be cognizant of how we are talking. Tread lightly when we are walking because the fruits of a mother's labor are constantly watching and listening. You can see their eyes glistening. And if you look closely, you can see their minds processing every little thing you do, multiplying every action and becoming every negative epithet you spew. I wrote this for the youth so that they will know the truth. I wrote this for you to give of yourself because this is an emergency. I wrote this with a sense of urgency, like I've only got 9.5 more years to write because I was only given 33.5 years of life, so I'm preparing for my crucifixion right here tonight through self-sacrifice. And I'm engineering my resurrection from death's yoke with each pen stroke and every word I've spoke. I wrote this because when we are being fruitful and multiplying, speaking life to children dying, we're giving them a little bit of what they need most. And if you're wondering what that is, it's hope.
For you.